I've got Mike Spector and then
quick echo of what John was talking about. I've had that exact experience with the reluctance to talk because of the language and feedback. And I had a visiting professor from Korea, Jae-Moo Lee, who came to Syracuse following the Florida State. And he was very aggressive. His English was much worse than the Korean students in Syracuse or in Florida State. But he was willing to be out there. Right. So I could never get these Korean students talking, but he did. But he was the perfect model because he made lots. He was just willing to be out there in the open. So that was good. And then a comment on Rita, what she was saying about engagement, and it relates to conversation too. Andy said 2+, and I'm not sure that's true. I think it's 1+ because I think the internal dialogue. You can have a conversation with yourself. Dave says something now, and then 3 days later, I'm having this inner dialogue, remembering or trying to figure out what he meant. I would say it's 1+, just a real minor.
Which may actually be one of the things the invisible learning is doing all the time.
Exactly.
Maybe I can also give a short reflection, because you said, well, for me, the customization is more important than the models. Actually, I agree with you, but the point is that customization is only possible due to the models. If I have 10 students, it's much too expensive to customize my education. When I have 1,000 or 10,000, I can do customization thanks to the fact that I have these models. So I agree, customization is what we're aiming at, but it has become possible due to information technology and due to the fact we have these models. So, just to explain.
Dan.
Dan Eastman, Western Governors University. I wanted to reflect on Leah's comments that we really cannot separate the instructor or the instruction from the learning that goes on. And I think what Jerome said about the online versus traditional context doesn't make a lot of difference. It's almost an artificial dichotomy there that we're presenting. And I think the larger dynamics, and also came out of your presentation, have to do with whether the learning is other directed, either by organizational or professional requirements or academic requirements, or if it's learner directed. And the self-directed learner knows what their objectives, their interests, their achievements are. And that changes the instructional model from being either an instructor who's didactically sharing information and competence versus a facilitator who's empowering self-direction in the learning process. And I think that also goes into some of the roots of the old education theory around andragogy and the fact that in many cases adult learners come with expertise, and if it's not a new domain for them, their kind of learning strategies and their ability to pick that up and to share in an online environment their expertise with others is an important part of that learning equation that we need to be more cognizant as we become an older, aging society across the globe. I mean, I think we're dealing more with less traditional age learners and more second career and older learners, whose needs are quite different.
Thank you.
I have a comment in response to Michael.
Could you identify yourself?
I'm Li Xinma from University of Louisiana and FDA. And I agree that on one hand, we need to think about the learners' different needs, but on the other hand, we cannot have learners using their learning style as an excuse of not, because I found like some of my students do say, I'm a video learner or I'm a verbal learner, I cannot do other stuff. But if you if you push them toward other way of learning, they can really improve and they can expand their expertise of learning skills of learning in other ways. And I found it's true that for many Asian students, we don't speak too much in the classroom, but I found if we are getting the opportunity to really learn how to speak out and how to interact with other people, we do improve and we do find other ways of learning rather than I don't know whether it makes sense, but I just thought
it makes a lot of sense.
We cannot just try to think about how to meet their needs. We also need to, as an individual learner, they need to think about we are in a community. We need to figure out how we can interact with other people and learn the ways that other people have been learning.
It's actually, that, if I may add a thought of my own, even though I'm facilitating, to just put on another hat, the on the notion of the invisible learner, one of the conclusions that this may lead to, let the individual alone. If that person is happy, if he or she is learning and doing so effectively, fine. But then again, I think, well, what would I do in a face-to-face context? There are those people sitting at the back rows of the classroom. Typically, what you do there is because that's a response to what you're saying. Yes, it's fine. You don't want to force people, but on the other hand, you also have a responsibility to creating opportunities for people to develop themselves. So very carefully, you try to draw them into the process, even if it's sort of against their initial inclination to get involved. You will want to get them involved. So it's a very delicate balancing, and I think a lot of those questions that are coming up actually, as Rocky was saying, you're looking for finding the right balance between the different things that you want to pursue all at the same time. This is actually what you see more and more in this incredibly rich learning landscape that we see unfolding. The number of options that we have available is enormous, and the options that there are for real human development are, for that reason, also enormous. I don't think we should ever feel ourselves being locked into one particular strategy. I think that is, if I interpret into your own rights, what you mean by mass individualization, because the two things in it is mass and it's individualization. It's actually trying to find that delicate balance between the two extremes of the spectrum. Yes, please, it's you.
Thank you.
And please identify yourself.
I'm Mosambi. I will work on Texas here at the University of Texarkana. Just here to speak to the changing learner. I think we're in the process of thinking of ourselves as the instructor, the teacher, and the learner out there. We forget sometimes that we too could be learners, that this is an opportunity for us to also learn about the learner, the learning environment, and the subject matter, and also to use all the resources available to us, including our students. Because some of them, like you were saying earlier, some of them have some expertise that we can use. Get them involved in the process of mass individualization that we've been talking about, because it is possible. You may have 20 students in your class. Each of them they have different needs that you want to meet. But sometimes you need to solicit their help, their expertise, make them co-designer of their learning process. Choosing the content, even design the materials that you can use for the rest of the class.
Thank you. Dave?
I want to pick up on a couple of threads. One thing that Diana said, and then one thing that John said earlier. John made a distinction between formal and informal, and you talked about the whole world out there. And I'm married to the internet queen. I'm married to a woman who's not been to college, but probably has more education than I do, because she spends about 2 hours a day on the internet, not just surfing, but deliberately learning various things. None of these are formal courses. None of these are instruction. None of these involve interaction with an instructor. She sets for herself a goal, I want to know something, and then she goes after it and finds tremendous amounts of resources. I mean, very self-directed person, obviously. But as I reflected on what you said and what John said, I thought, you know, we're talking very much about formal courses here, right, creating instruction that is instruction. Now, of course, I'm an instructional designer, and I'm very interested in that and biased toward that. But on the other hand, I watch my wife run. In fact, I've learned very much not to ever argue with her very much, because as sure as I do, if she doesn't already know the answer, by 2 days later, she'll have four resources pointing out her point of view is absolutely correct. But I'm wondering if we also need to think about, this is really the invisible learner, I think, that learners who I don't even know. That is, I'm creating materials, and maybe this is, you know, in websites and things. I'm creating materials for learners who I may never interact with, who I may never see, but who are all, and I'm really invisible learners, but who, in fact, will be learners. And that raises the other question, and that is, as we train these learners in more formal settings, isn't that one of the goals that we probably should have? I mean, we live in a world where the amount of resources available to us at the touch of a button exceeds even the wildest imagination. And so I'm wondering if, as we talk about this, you broaden my view. I just wanted to say, because we need to broaden our view a little beyond, I think, the formal coursework, which is usually out there for the purpose of credentialing or getting credit. And perhaps we need to be thinking more as we create this instruction about the possibility that our instruction may reach many, many more students than those who formally register. And how do we think about them? And how do we create informal interaction? I mean, Andy says a conversation. Well, this is really an indirect conversation. I'm having a conversation with an author I will never meet, never talk to, never involved with, and yet I'm learning a great deal, or not me, but
in fact, Dave, if you look at some of the research from the old individualization, you know, the old self-instructional modules and cognitive instruction and that kind of stuff, the most persistent, most independent learners were in fact slowed down by somebody wanting to have conversations and direct all these things, and it would literally slow them down. It's just, you know, leave them alone.
I have a couple of requests, actually. The gentleman over there, and Michael and Diana.
I'm Sean from University. I'm just interested in your question, Michael. We live in enhanced interaction. We talk about a lot about interaction online, distance education. We need to enhance that, and also talk about the learning resources, the interaction between people. I was just share my experience. I do a research the topic is the format shifting dilemma in distance education. It's published in a popular review of distance education. For that research, it's talking about the students get into distance education, there's a threshold, and they feel uncomfortable. But the time is pushing everybody. Teacher are pushed, students are pushed, because the time develops. We said that students have learning styles, excuses. So the time would not allow me to take that excuse. And we are developing students as lifelong learners. If students stop at this education class, they stop as a lifelong learner. Because in the future, this distance education is part of our life. It's part of our education, definitely. And so when we teach distance education, we realize there's a threshold for students, especially this international. And some teachers don't realize that. They think that I'm a teacher, 10 years experience, 25 years experience. I'm a good teacher. So my class is definitely a good class. If it's not good, the student are not good. So we need to understand student needs, and understand themselves, and myself as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So we need to understand the learning happen. If you don't understand that, sometimes success you see and trouble happen, the hidden trouble, the hidden problem, unperceived problem happen, you don't realize until the problem or class on. And I do another research. That research is, I have submitted to Michael Specter. You?
Yes, chaps.
I go submit to the PDRCRE, and I submit to something else, but I get that thought that Michael Specter will give me a response. That is the extent of the solve that problem, the learning dilemma, formative learning dilemma. And then I developed one way, one of the methods to have interaction. With the interaction between people, can fix most of the problem, cannot fix some problem. But we want to enhance that, make the mind better, make the resource better support. And then the problem, the topic is the online top-down modeling model. is I showed something students understand better. I put the student the project, the learning, the assignment, put it online, first put it as a model, and then give a detailed tutorial and help students to realize and achieve this goal. I have my I teach computer literacy class. I have top students in class, top students in this. And the current the student in this student in class definitely have no problem. The student in this now they benefit from this model because they see what you require, such as there's a project model show what the requirements will come out. Come out good. The students see that, see the requirement, see the benefit and get motivated. Then they follow the tutorial, then top down go to details, all the tutorial details get. Then we fix some interaction between words, the text based interaction, and let them visually see and see video based, text based, and the graphic based information. So I just one of the way answer the question and how to solve the text based interaction problem. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I have at least three more requests, and we have 7 minutes left before the wrap up. Michael, I think you were first.
Okay, this is really sort of I'm also conscious of the time, so this is sort of a final remark. It's somewhat a remark. We struggle with some very important questions here, and I think part of what's motivating us is our desire to assure ourselves that we're good teachers, and we want to get that validation by having some tangible evidence that our students are being responsive and engaged in learning, and so we look for these cues from them, and it's a little bit harder to find those cues in a distance environment. But ultimately, I was reminded by John's comments about informal learning, Dave talking about seeking knowledge, totally irrespective of any structured environment. And I think in the final analysis, I always come back to something that John Dewey wrote in 1938, which kind of puts me in my place when I'm wanting my students to tell me how much they love my courses. And that is, he said that the mark of an effective teacher is to create the conditions for productive inquiry that take place independent of the teacher and independent of the course. Think about that. We should always come back to that. The mark of an effective teacher is the one who creates the conditions for productive inquiry that often occur independent of the teacher and the course. You know, and you were talking, Dave, about people who learn by reading somebody else's work. Now, those of us who have the opportunity to get something published, unless somebody contacts me, I have no idea who I'm teaching by something I've written. I just hope that I said something worthwhile and that more than two people have read it. But the point is, I have to be satisfied with the fact that I've thought about something, I've articulated something meaningful, I've shared it, I've put it out there, and even if I never find out whether somebody really was receptive and learned something from that, hopefully I've done something noble and worthwhile. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the analogy of the iceberg. There's always a lot beneath the surface that we don't know about that's happening with our students. And we have to just accept that as part of an occupational hazard of being a teacher.
Well, what you just said resonates very well with the quotes that we had put on top of the exercise that we were engaging in from an interview by Aldo Ciccolini, the Italian-born French pianist, whom I actually heard in a radio interview in the presence of two of his own students, and he was asked, what do you see as your perfect student? And he said, the one who learns to think with his own head. So it's the person who separates, who is given the opportunity to separate him or himself from the teacher, and it resonates perfectly with Huey's observations.
And
Diana.
It leads perfectly into my response to your comment, which is, I think, in curriculum design, I think it's a matter of, at least this is my personal bias, moving away from having materials to creating environments that support the co-creation of learning by the learning communities. So instead of the designer designing the course per se, let's just create environments and let the learners create the course. Then it works for everybody. It's the ultimate in flexibility and customization.
Mm-hmm. I think they're the hardest kind of design.
Hardest kind, absolutely the hardest. But maybe the most rewarding and
I think that you mentioned something earlier, the concept of invisible, and I think that often instruction might be a bit overrated, and people have been learning for thousands of years, and traditional schooling has a couple of centuries history, and maybe the concept of invisible computing that Donald Norman talks about, and the ubiquitous computing, and that the internet and all these technologies are coming around now, that the opportunities for more informal learning will be more easily realized. And that might be a shift we need to consider. And the problem is that as educators and instructional designers, what we're basically doing is forcing technologies into our instruction that were never designed for instruction in the first place. But I'm not going to talk about the personal computer as being nothing but personal, because it was designed for business. And we come after the fact and try to force everything instead of sitting down as educators, instructional designers, with engineers and computer scientists in interdisciplinary groups to actually design technologies that are designed for learning, that are designed to learn in multiple environments, in and out of school, and so on. So that's just an idea. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Well, there's room for one more question or observation perhaps before I... Leah?
Okay, I just want to make an observation about getting students involved in the course in the curriculum development. I'm currently teaching a course with George Washington University, and I'm trying it out because I made some kind of short story. I provided the first two chapters, and it's a course on performance assessment. And to be very honest, I really needed some help also from the students, you know. It's a learning process on two sides. And that works very, very well, you know, because students volunteer even to write the next piece of the soap story. And it is performance assessment at the University of Ethiopia. And, you know, they can really discuss all the problems they have in their daily life, you know, with faculty who are incompetent, the students are stupid and whatever, you know, it all comes up. And I think it's a very nice way of getting students involved. In addition, every week, two students prepare this meet the class, you know, so they have to be involved. And 2 weeks before, I give them some ideas and then they work it out.
Good example of co-design.
Sorry, I have to tell this.
Yeah, no, it's perfect for not contribution.